Welcome to Reinventing You. I'm your host, Danielle Silverman. I believe that in today's world of ever-constant evolution, the only career change that matters is when what you do matches who you are and what you believe. This show is where you'll learn how embracing change and reinventing yourself will help you navigate any disruptions and lead a life of happiness and fulfillment, especially in this ever-changing world. Your purpose and your meaning will drive your personal transformation. As I like to say, it's your vision, your life. Be passionate about it. Reinventing You starts now. Hello, everybody. I'm Danielle Silverman, the host of Reinventing You, where you'll learn to reinvent your career. In our previous podcast, we talked about how to strategically plan your career and choose the next move that's right for you so that you can achieve your goals and reach your full potential. Today, I'm honored to receive my guest, Marky Reed. Marky is an internationally recognized speaker, coach, and consultant who is committed to helping women get what they want from their lives and businesses. She's the author of several books, including Launch, Grow, and Prosper as a Solopreneur and Leadership Styles. Marky has been supporting enterprising folks getting clear about who they are. Does that sound familiar to anybody? What they want from their businesses and lives, and moving into a more prosperous future. And she's been doing this for more than 25 years. Her practical and inspirational approach will help you live the life you truly desire. Seems like Marky and I have a lot in common. If you want to learn more about Marky, you can go to her website at MRGRP, that's MR for Marky Reed, GRP for group, -us.com. And today I've invited Marky because she also has a great knowledge and experience in career development and career strategy. So together, we're going to take a deeper dive into some of the factors that affect you as you try to build your career, especially in today's turbulent world. So welcome to the show, Marky.
I'm so glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, it looks like we decided to wear the same color today.
We sent the memo out and we both responded. So
that's right. That's very cool. So Marky, can you start by telling our listeners a little bit about your background and how you became an expert in career strategy?
Sure. You know, I have to say that I tried at various businesses to be in before I discovered this as my path. And all of those tapped into good skills, but they really weren't things that were really natural to me. And I got hired as a contract resume writer. I knew how to interview people, and I knew how to put together a good story because I was a journalist. And in those days, the resume formatting was very, very simple. Mm-hmm. And so I just learned to do that. And then I found that I listened to people's stories and they made sense to me. And I was able to start to help them think about what else is out there and had they thought of this and they had thought of that. And the next thing I knew, I discovered that I was in business. And so, because a year later, the company that had hired me as a contractor offered me a partnership in the company, and they were growing, and they were in some transition themselves. So then I, you know, joined, and I have continued to get training and development and experience. And I'm always amazed that there's still people who aren't sure how to look for work or what kind of job they should be getting or what their career is. And so I've been able to do this really for 30 years now, and it's been a real delight.
That's wonderful. But it doesn't look like you necessarily created a strategy for yourself in the beginning, at least.
You know, in retrospect, I see that I was in the inquiry. Right. So I knew that entrepreneurial, that's what I was headed for, that I wanted to be an entrepreneur. And I tried out various things. I tried a sewing business because I knew how to sew. I even tried a small publishing company that was related that because I was thinking of maybe going into hospitality. And so I did a book on a hospitality guide. again, all of those were things I could do. I just didn't really love them. Mm-hmm. And so when I discovered that the resume writing was a lot like writing articles or just in a different format, it's really married some passions for me, some interests and some natural abilities. Mm-hmm. And from that, you know, I have once I really understood, okay, if this is what I'm going to do, then I need to have a strategy. Mm-hmm. And that's really when I got serious about, did I want to be in the business that I'm in now? Did I want to go out on my own? How do I go and do that? And that's really where I started creating that path. And when I talk to people about strategy, sometimes we just look back and see, okay, what's happened so far? Mm-hmm. And let's name the parts that are actually part of the strategy you've been in the middle of all along.
Right.
And that's really what clicked for me is when I saw that, this isn't new. It's just now that I can see it more clearly.
Yeah. And you just described some of the elements that should be considered when you're creating a career strategy, right?
Yeah.
So that's fantastic. I mean, but you knew at the beginning that you wanted to be an entrepreneur. So there was a goal at the end. And there was a lot of experimentation, which is also what you do when you're reinventing yourself, reinventing your career. What does it mean for those people who don't know what it means to have a strategy for your career? How would you explain it to them so that they would understand how essential it is?
I think for me, it's about going past, you know, what my job title is or what company you're going to work for. There's three elements really that I look at in creating a strategy. One is, you know, what do you want to do all day? What are the tasks, responsibilities, the kind of what we consider the job duties or job description? Are those things that are you're capable of, are enlivening to you, and that you can continue to grow in? And then the second element is what kind of environment do you want to be in? You know, do you want to be in a startup entrepreneurial? Do you want to be in something that's very large and established? Do you want to be in government? Do you want to be, you know, in tech? Like what kind of thing? And also physically, like, do you want to work in a really small office? Do you want to have a view out of your office? You know, all those sorts of things.
Yeah.
I think when we all got the chance to create home offices, we started really thinking about what we actually wanted in our offices. And then the third piece that I think a lot of people forget about and they don't really seriously consider is it's what level of influence do you want to have in that environment? And that level of influence may not be your first position in that organization or in that career gets you that level, but you like, so for some people, they really want to have the ear of the key decision makers and they want to be able to influence those key decisions. For other people, they really want to be part of sort of the background of the, like the stage crew, you know, and putting stuff together. They don't necessarily want to be bossed around and tossed around, but they want to be able to influence maybe a different kind of sphere than the very top key level decisions. And that last piece is usually what we forget about. In fact, most people I find are frustrated because they feel like their voice isn't being represented in decisions and they don't have the ear of their manager or people who are making those big decisions, you know, whether the company grows or moves or, you know, whatever it does. And of course, for me, I wanted to be at the very top level of influence. So that's why I started my own business.
That makes sense. It certainly makes sense. And you're right, because people don't necessarily think of those things. And then they end up in a job where they are unhappy. And I think that's one of the things that the pandemic brought to light is people realized that there was something missing in their lives. What are some of the skills that people might need to develop or a mindset perhaps, because you are also, I think, talking about a mindset. What is necessary for them to constantly evolve and in the strategy of their careers?
I think the first one is being really curious about yourself. Mm-hmm. Curious about how the things that are natural or energizing to you, where else could they be applied? You know, where else do people do that? I also find that, you know, being curious about asking other people, how did you get to be where you are? Like, what, you know, What was your path? And
yeah.
that to me leads to the networking. So networking is both the what I call the kind of the happenstance, the casual meeting people, discovering who they are and connecting. And it's also there's an intentional part of networking where you actually go out and pursue certain kinds of people or certain specific names of people that you know in the community that you want to connect with. And if you do those two things, really, you're going to always find opportunities.
Yeah. So remaining curious and also developing a successful network. So many people, though, they're afraid of the word networking. So what tips do you have for helping them and helping them build a network and move away from that negative connotation?
Yeah, you know, my business used to be called Career Networks years ago. That's what my first business name was. And I named it that because I really felt like it was all about network. And of course, I'm extroverted. So for me, networking was like, you know, go to conferences, go to events. And then I discovered a lot of people were just terrified at that thought. So I look for, you know, what are your strengths? If your strength is one-to-one, then start going and finding individuals to connect with and use your current network. And, you know, I always say to people, if you don't think you can be networking, if you know three humans on this planet, you can network. If you know three other humans, you can meet everybody on the planet eventually if you're really committed to it.
Yeah.
So there's, so starting one-to-one, if that's your comfort zone, and then going to events where maybe several of those people are, where you start to feel like, oh, I'm part of this group. And if you're more comfortable in the larger groups, then start going and doing the mix and mingle. And I do look for two things in that process is bring, whenever you're out there connecting with people, whether that's on an individual or a larger group, do two things. Deepen the relationships you already have. Always acknowledge and say hello and check in with people that you are, that you know out there because it's part of your community. And then broaden into one or two more. And so if you go to an event and you're really not comfortable with big groups, then connect with people that you know, meet one or two more, do that. And if you do that consistently, if you go to enough events and enough groups and things like that, you'll be known and you'll know people.
So those are excellent points to bring through about networking and about helping people move past their issues with networking. You talked about curiosity as well, and curiosity about getting to know yourself better. How can somebody assess what their strengths are, or their weaknesses, or, you know, I hate those when people ask those questions in an interview, but unfortunately it still happens. So they have to get to know what their strengths and weaknesses are, but also their passions, and so that they can become better informed about the things that they want to take.
There's so many great tools out there. And I have always used personality type, also known as the Myers-Briggs type indicator, as part of my exploration with people. So I always help people discover what their type is and then figure out how does that translate into actual jobs and organizations. But there's so many out there, and I think that that's one place. But I say don't stop there. So, you know, like if I read my description of my type, it makes sense to me, but that's not all of who I am. There's more to that. There's all of my experience and my background. So I encourage people to go and talk to folks who know them. So they're, you know, when I introduce people into the networking process, you know, I say, you know, if you know three people, and I ask them to choose three people that they trust, that trust them, and that those people actually like you, as opposed to they just think that you're a nice person. And it might seem superficial to say that they like you, but you want people who enjoy your company, because those are the folks who really see you. Most of us are really blind to the things that are real gems and are real amazing parts of who we are, because they're just normal to us. So like breathing in and out, sort of like being right-handed or left-handed, we don't even notice it. And then other people notice it and they say, oh my gosh, look at that. So, you know, it's that. So using some kind of a resource or tool to get some language, doing some talking to people that are trusted advisors, trusted friends, and then in addition to that, then start test driving that, you know, out there to say, maybe you go and meet with some people that you don't know as well, but you say, here's some ideas I have. And what do you think about that? And what do you see? And it seems like it takes a long time, but I know that that takes less time than going and finding a whole bunch of jobs and then finding out you don't like them and having to find new jobs.
Totally agree with you there. So the issue that I come across today, or that I think about a lot, is that today's world is traditionally, today's world is, it's uncertain, it's chaotic, it's ambiguous, people don't necessarily know how to deal with things. So I think also traditional career strategies may not always work. So how do you think they need to evolve if we're going to remain effective and relevant in this world?
You know, a friend of mine who always had this phrase, he said, I want to be the last one that's thrown overboard. And so what he meant by that is he was always learning new skills. He was always learning new things, and because he was curious, you know, and some of them were just personal things, like he wanted to learn how to track animals. And so he went out and learned how to track animals. But he kept himself engaged in that way. And I always appreciated that, like, be the last person thrown overboard. Because if you are learning new things and you, again, are curious, you know, you're asking people like, well, what do you think about that? And, oh, that's interesting. And you're having those kinds of exchanges. Then people will see the way you think, and they'll look to see how they can include you. Mm-hmm. You know, what sometimes people feel like they're supposed to be the smartest, like they have to have some brilliant insight. And actually, I find a really good question sometimes gives people more information about you than your answer does.
That's a great thought. Questions are indeed very, very powerful. And yeah, it's interesting because I just had somebody ask me last night, what can you do to remain relevant? And I think absolutely curiosity is there. You mentioned it at the very beginning. But it takes a certain mindset. So how does one develop that mindset?
That's a tricky one. You know, I think that when we're looking at all the uncertainty and kind of the disruption in our culture right now, I think that there's a tendency for people to pull back or withdraw in some way. And you know, I think our mental health is really in a crisis state in all over the world. And so when I say, you know, just get out there, people are like, yeah, it's not so easy. Even if you can do tiny, tiny little bits, you know, just like nibble here and there, because if you nibble for long enough, you can consume something fairly large. Mm-hmm. And it might not be that you have a big career goal attached to something that you're learning or discovering, but it might be something that leads you to what's next. So, you know, that idea of having a strategy, like as though it's all perfectly written out, I don't really think life works that way. You know, businesses have discovered all those fabulous strategies don't work that way either. But what we can discover is that if I keep looking for what's next, and I'm sort of taking little bites and little bites, all of a sudden I might find a little nugget. I might find a nugget that I didn't know was going to be there when I started. And then I explore that a little bit more. So, you know, so some people are very big vision. They have that giant, they're like way out there. And it takes them longer to get there than they intended, but they have a vision and it pulls them forward. And some people are very much in the immediate. And it doesn't really matter where you are, because both are necessary. But another friend of mine she said, you can drive across the country in the dark, as long as you have your headlights on, because you can see 10 feet in front of you at a time.
You don't need to see further than that at the time. Yeah.
Sometimes that's all you see is sometimes it's just 10 feet in front of you. And you, if you can get to the next 10 feet, you can see another 10 feet. And I think when we're in a mental health, like when we're really in a state where we're not feeling like our best selves, sometimes it's 5 feet. You know, sometimes it's a foggy night. It's not a clear night. It's a foggy night. You can really just barely see 5 feet in front of you.
I think that's actually an excellent strategy. And it's also about remaining flexible and trying different things, because we can't anticipate necessarily what's going to happen. We couldn't anticipate COVID. You can't anticipate a war. Sometimes you can, but there is an uncertainty and there is volatility. So it's a good idea to just take small steps. I had a coach once who called it Rice Krispie steps sometimes. That's amazing. Yeah. I think this is a great place to just take a break, and then we'll come back and go even deeper if it's okay. Welcome back to Reinventing You, where we're speaking with Marky Reed about how to develop a strategy for your career. And Marky, everything you've said so far has been right on point. In today's world, it's very difficult to just make a common plan. There's no such thing anymore as a three-year plan or a five-year plan, even in business, never mind in your career. But what I'm finding also is when I talk to my clients is that many of them actually are interested in so many different things that they don't know what to choose. So I tell them that today, instead of, you know, because the life cycle of an organization is very short, I think it's an average of about 6 years, and for tech, it's probably either 6 months or to a year. Many people, instead of having one long career path and staying the same company for 30 years, they change every 2 years. And some of them even say, well, you know, why can't I do two things at the same time? And what that has created in today's world is something we call a portfolio career, which means that the person pursues multiple streams of income or job roles simultaneously, instead of focusing on one single job or full-time position. So how does this approach to career management how does it help professionals today, do you think?
I think it's actually a really great response to what's happening. And I think that part of the reason why I wanted to be in business for myself is I wanted multiple streams of income. Because I think that multiple streams of income are the secret to financial security. You know, plenty of clients have come to you who have had, you know, very well-paying jobs, but that was their entire income. And when it disappeared, I've had people who told me that they were going to sell their job. They got laid off and they were going to sell their house right away. And I said, wait a minute, let's back up just a little bit. You know, I checked in first to make sure. It's like, really, are you in that much dire straits? And sometimes people are in real precarious situations, but because that sort of heavy dependency on one income, it's devastating when it's gone. So having some of some side pieces, I think, first of all, it gets back to that curiosity piece, because if you're generating other income, and even if it sort of seems like a very low return on your investment in terms of what you're doing, maybe you're having some little thing you do on the side, I don't really consider that to be a waste of time, because it might actually be giving you some energy and some excitement and kind of keeping you in that learning. But also, you know, I find that when people are truly in that portfolio mode where they have maybe three or four different things that are their income sources, one of them will grow, and they might find that one of them actually they start to get tired of, because it's just an incredible amount of effort for what they're personally getting out of it, much less any income. And they might let that fall away. But it's in that experimentation. And I do think that some people are truly built for portfolio careers. Like that is their natural expression. And they're told that there's something like they need to focus and get serious as though they're not being serious.
Right.
You know, they're actually quite serious about all those things. And even in business, oftentimes, I know you've probably had coaches who say, you need to focus on one thing and do that one thing. Well, you know, that's not who I am.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, yes, I could probably use my energy more efficiently and all of that. But if part of who you are in terms of the natural energy you have is to do several different things, then do them. And you'll find that over time that will change. You might discover that you don't want to do all those things after a while. You're tired, or your life changes, or you move and, you know, some circumstance changes and then you let something go. But having multiple streams and multiple kind of engaging things will keep you enlivened and keep you engaged. I'm always curious. There's so many more people that I'm working with who as adults have been discovered they have ADD.
Yes.
It's a fascinating development for the number of entrepreneurs actually who tell me that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the reasons they struggle in their businesses, but also being in business and sometimes is the thing that actually helps them be successful with their ADD, because it allows them to have that variety.
Mm-hmm.
And when they're stressed, sometimes it becomes more difficult to focus on what's really important in the moment. But I think a lot more of us have more breadth. In fact, again, many people are just dissatisfied in their work because what they're doing is so limiting. Yeah. And they know there's more to them. They know that they are capable of more. So I think it's fabulous. And I actually think that it's been going on for a long time. It's just that now we have language for it. And it's now not considered like what I'm doing while I'm looking for full-time work. You know, it's like it could actually be a life.
Absolutely. And then that means also like switching every 2 years if you want, just to grow and to learn more.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's funny, it's called portfolio careers, but I've also heard the term slash career, because you're doing this slash that slash, like I'm a coach, I'm a consultant, I'm a trainer, I'm a speaker. Some people are authors as well. I hope to be there one day as well.
Yeah.
But they're all different skills. And and you're right. You're absolutely right. It allows you to not only to try different things and to become different things, and to follow your interests and your passions, but also not to get bored.
Right. One of the ways that I help people kind of understand that, like the people who are just sort of naturally doing that and they can't help themselves.
Yeah.
And I say, you know, think of all the things you do under a corporate umbrella called Me Incorporated.
Yep.
And so maybe you have four or five different things that you do that generate income and are part of your work. If you understand how they're connected, then they're not really separate. They're not divergent. They all came from you, and they're just different expressions. So if you sort of think of, you know, all of that under one umbrella, and then you have various different pieces that come under it, I've seen people all of a sudden breathe easier when they realize, oh, that's not a wrong way to go about my life. They're all me, and they're just different ways that I engage with people.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And they do have something in common. And it's interesting because when we look at all the skills and experiences of people, we also, and their interests, of course, some people just do, you know, it's flat, it's horizontal. But when you do both depth and breadth, you've got, you know, something called something that's like a T-shape, if you will.
Yeah.
And that is also, it's not called a portfolio or a slash career, but it's also the same concept, if you will, of looking at the depth and breadth of who you are and what you do.
Right. For some people, their depth comes simply by being on the planet long enough that they've accumulated enough years.
Yes.
And for other people, they really started with that depth and then they grew into breadth.
Yeah.
You know, so again, that sort of is that using personality language, you know, that people who are extroverted just bring breadth to life and they tend to have a lot of different things. My business partner is opposite of me in this way. He's introverted. And he used to tell me all the time in the beginning that I needed to focus more. And I almost didn't even, I was like, I almost didn't, like, it was like he was speaking a foreign language. I was like, what? Why? that? Why would I do that? And he kept saying, you got to focus more. You got to focus more. And I'm like, no, I don't. It's not who I am. I've learned to focus a bit more, but there's still an incredible breadth of what I do. And in fact, he went deeper into his work and has created a very, very deep legacy in his work.
Yeah. Well, it takes all kinds, as they say, right?
Yeah.
And I was always told, you know, you have to have a niche because when you're perceived to be an expert, that's when people will come to you. And it doesn't matter whether they're in that niche or not. So there's also that side of things. The other thing that comes up is that we know the world is constantly changing, right? And there are trends, new trends that come up, new opportunities that arise in uncertainty, in ambiguity, in volatility. What kinds of strategies can we use to anticipate or to respond to this kind of volatility?
Actually, I think it's a lot of it is attending and physically attending networks that are relevant to your career, mm-hmm. and possibly even some that are outside your career. Mm-hmm. A lot of us overlook the complexity and nuance that's available at conferences. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that we got a real good look at what conferences can bring in these last few years when there were hardly any in-person conferences. Because there's a magic that occurs in conferences that you cannot get online and you cannot get any other way. It's the bumping into someone, it's sitting next to someone, it's having lunch with them, it's even going, maybe even leaving the conference for the afternoon with another person who wants to go have a more in-depth engagement. You would never be able to do that if you had contacted them and said, hey, can we schedule a time to have a 3-hour conversation? They wouldn't have done it. And so I think that being out there, and again, I know that I'm extroverted and I know that sounds like, oh my God, conferences are scary for me. But I know lots and lots of folks who just learn to take care of themselves in their introverted self. They go and they find quiet corners and they go for walks. They leave, and so take care of yourself in the space. But it doesn't mean that you should not go to them. And if you're really nervous, then some of that original networking that I was talking about, that one-to-one, will mean that once you arrive, you have a bit more like connections. You see people. But the conferences and professional organizations are a way to continue to learn and figure out what's happening, what's next, and even new language, you know, things like portfolio career or, you know, it's not as though people weren't doing that before. It's just, that's what we're calling it. Mm-hmm. And so there's a way that if you don't use current language, people start to think, you know, you're outdated and you really don't know what you're doing. You know, I remember, you probably remember this too, you know, when we were still trying to figure out what to call what we now call the internet.
Yes.
And it was, you know, the World Wide Web. It was, the network. It was something, it was like 3 or 4 different names. And I remember in the versions of my career development book that I use, I had to keep changing the subtitle of that section of how to use the internet. And when I look back at them, I would sort of laugh at the names that we called it. But as long as you call it current language, people know where you are. And, you know, even things like learning technology, like doing podcasts and, you know, doing video and things like that, that just all kind of keeps us going. So it gets back to that curiosity piece, you know, staying engaged with your industry. And I know that takes money. I know it takes time. I know it takes energy. But if you want to stay relevant, you gotta be out there and engage.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. There's something else that you mentioned. And that is about taking care of yourself. So the example of the introvert at the conference who takes time away just to recharge. But I think that's one of the things that is also extremely important, because when we take care of ourselves first, then we're able, and it doesn't matter whether you're extroverted or introverted, we always need some kind of self-care.
Yeah.
We're in a better position afterwards to have that curiosity and to grow that mindset. You know, what are some of the things that we can do to take care of ourselves?
I think that honestly, the first and most important thing is sleep. If we are not sleeping, you know, people who think they can exist on 3 or 4 hours of sleep because they have in the past, they are up for some rude awakenings. You know, if we aren't getting good sleep, I am someone who really, I used to, you know, sleep like the dead. I would go to sleep in 5 minutes and I'd be out for 8 hours and gone. Of course, that's different as we age, things change, but I still sleep pretty deeply most of the time. And when I don't, I suffer the next day and often the following day. Yes. And so to me, whatever you can do to make sure that you're getting good sleep is going to be number one. And then there's also, you know, the eating well and all that, but having some physical, having some reason to move your body. You know, I think it's funny how, you know, 50 years ago, probably 50 years ago was when the real fitness thing became a thing. Like we all had to go become fit. Because prior to that, people simply moved. People just were active in their bodies and they were out there moving. In the US, I remember there was Jack LaLanne when I was a kid. And I think that was like, so that was probably, I think he was in the 60s. When he came out, he was like the fit. I don't know if you had that up in Canada, but he was like this fit.
I did.
Anyway, the point of it is that having reason to move your body is going to make it easier to stay active. As soon as we stop moving, the less we move. And so whether that is having a standing desk or you make yourself go out for walks or you use the stairs, all those kinds of things make a difference. So I think fundamentally it's sleep. And then, you know, I also really, I understand better now than ever the importance of friends and community. During the pandemic, you know, I connected with a lot of folks online, friends online. There were some writing groups that I joined, the various things that I joined that sort of were kind of by accident that they occurred. And then we became very intensely connected. And all those things are still going. There's a group of people that I met at a conference that are all the same type as I am. We were all at a type conference internationally. And we kind of knew each other, but we, you know, we kept like wanting to know each other better. We said, hey, we should start a group of ENFJs. And so we did once a month, and we just met our 2-year anniversary.
Wow.
And there's, it just so happens it's all women, but it wasn't intentional that way. And we have people from up and down the Eastern United States. And then there's one woman in Japan and there's a woman in France. And we all have known each other, but we really know each other. Mm. And there's some of like they're precious to me.
Yeah.
So those connections, and I know that's personal. Like I know for me, having those personal connections is really, really vital. But even if you only have 2 other people in your life that are those kind of like people you can hang out, there's this whole epidemic of loneliness now. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's coming out is we've just forgotten the ability to hang out with people, which by the way, conferences is hanging out with people.
Absolutely. And so is networking. It's just hanging out with people. And having a discussion and a curiosity to find out about them. How did you get to where you were going to be? But I absolutely understand. The same thing happened to me. I happened to be taking a course in how to develop an online course. And there were 2 other people also taking the course. And I didn't know, and I knew them from another group that I was in, but I had no idea they were joining this particular course. And so when we were asked to form an accountability group, I asked them hey, why don't the 3 of us get together? And it's turned into, it's been, I don't know, maybe 5 months now. It's turned into much, much more than an accountability group. We meet every week and we just encourage each other. And we, you know, we share so many more things than what we're doing professionally. That personal, that need to connect with people is definitely there.
Yeah, yeah.
This is another great place to take a break. So when we come back, we'll see if we can come up with some even more intriguing questions. So, Marky, this whole thing about either being in a team and working together or having that personal connection with other people reminds me of something that we talk about in the reinvention world today. And that's, you know, what we call co-opetition, which means that we cooperate with our competition. But I think even more on a personal level, if you're developing your professional skills or looking for a strategy, it really is about collaborating with other people in various ways and co-creating something, possibly, where you might discover that you have some things in common that you might want to work with them on. So have you encountered that sort of thing before? What would be your thoughts on that?
Yeah, and it's, you know, they we talk about teamwork all the time, and usually I trained and consulted in the space of, you know, in teamwork with organizations, and what happens so often is that people say you're going to be a team, and they just sort of throw a bunch of humans together and they say go be productive, but they don't really give them any kind of assistance or skills in how to work together. And what usually the reason I was called in is because it was a team that wasn't working well. Right. And so the two pieces that I saw were missing were trust and respect. Mm. And when we trust and respect each other, really all kinds of things are transcended. You know, it doesn't matter what generation you're from, doesn't matter your type, your background, your age, all of those things just start to disappear. Because if I trust and respect you, then I'm going to listen. And then I'm also going to know that you're going to listen to me. Mm-hmm. And you're going to respectfully disagree and ask me more questions, you know, so there's all that kind of that deepening of that those relationships. Mm-hmm. And I think the other piece of that is to understand, kind of getting back to that career piece of like, what's your role? Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I wrote, actually a big reason I wrote the book on leadership styles, is it's based in personality type. And I really saw so many people who came to my office who said they weren't a leader. And when I listened to their career, I thought, you have been a leader your whole life. But because they didn't fit the sort of very traditional dominant culture idea of a leader, they didn't see it. Mm-hmm. And so the model really helps people understand that there are lots and lots of ways to lead. In fact, some of the most powerful leaders lead from behind the group. Mm-hmm. And others who lead from the side. And then there are people who lead from the front. And if you understand kind of your natural space, you can contribute to any group. You know, like I happen to be somebody who shows up onto the side more naturally. I can go to the front if I need to. But once I understood that, I saw that I didn't need to or want to be in charge all the time. Mm-hmm. And I could actually help the person who was in charge, regardless of their style, be successful by being an effective team member. And so, you know, we often think of like the leader and then the rest of us are like, no, everybody's a leader. Everybody's a leader because we're also all followers, and leadership and followership are really two sides of the same coin. So for me, that piece around, you know, deeper cooperation and more effective team gets back to that trust and respect with each other, understanding how we can access the resources of the team. And then, you know, having a rocking good time while you're doing it. You know, that's the thing about when you have trust and respect, there's also humor. Yes. And there's real humor, not the kind of humor that's mocking or yes. belittling. It's yes. real humor about you. Something happens and everybody just laughs because, oh my gosh, people are freaking funny.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's when I'm doing a training or a workshop, I listen for those laughs. I listen to that kind of laughter. When mm-hmm. I hear people start to have those kind of like, oh, right, people are really freaking funny. That's when I know the energy has shifted. Mm-hmm. Immediately, the whole energy of the group shifts and we're able to get to someplace much deeper, faster. Mm-hmm.
So there's a couple of things here that I noticed. First of all, one is the first is you get to know yourself really well, which I think is critical to helping build whatever strategy you're interested in. And the other is also by building trust and respect, you get to know the other person really well.
Yeah.
And vice versa. And that's when a relationship can really grow and where that laughter can come in, because we're human and we recognize and respect each other's foibles, if you will.
Yeah, and I really feel like we've, as a world, but particularly I know, you know, in the US, we've just lost our sense of humor. Like we've so much lost our sense of humor about being a human being. And it is, you know, you talked about disruptive and uncertain times. You know, it is, there are just a lot of really angry people who don't have any place to put that anger, and they're taking it out in violence. They're expressing it in violence, and some pretty severe violence. And, you know, when we've lost that trust and respect for other people, that's where we go. We disregard them. I mean, it's where wars start. It's right. It's where genocides start. It's all of those things start with, I don't see this other person as worthy, and I don't trust them, and I don't respect them. And then all of a sudden, that changes everything in a flash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't think we're going to solve those problems of the world in this podcast, but I absolutely agree with you. It's very sad, actually. Now I've forgotten what the second thing was. I think it's also about, you know, that the ability to come together and create something. The other thing I was going to say is, I was always taught that when you talk about teams, right? That whenever there is a change that is going on in the organization and people are resisting, that that's actually a good thing, because it means that they care, that there is something that's going on. The thing to worry about is if people are completely apathetic.
Exactly. They're complying and they're apathetic. That's when the real worry needs to start. And you're right, exactly. When somebody is, you know, if somebody's just sort of complaining to complain, it's different. But there's if somebody's got a complaint that seems to be persistent, it's because there is a core need not being met. Right. And it is wise for any supervisor or manager or leader of that person to sit down and find out what is underneath, what is the root of this? And, you know, sometimes it's because they really don't want to be there. Mm-hmm. So help them move on. And sometimes it's because they have a really uncomfortable chair that they can't bother, they can't be productive in, and they need a new chair, you know? And so it's like really finding out what is it that's under that, because you'll discover all kinds of riches in there. And you know, if you can change someone from being, you know, very disgruntled to being somebody who's all in, I mean, that's powerful.
Mm-hmm. And it's about listening. Right. Yeah. And making sure that you are constantly listening and remaining flexible to whatever the needs are. And that not only at work, but also in your small groups and in your friendships, in your relationships in general. That's the collaboration, I think, that is critical in today's world. It's, you know, just co-creating something helps bring people together, and the sense of shared ownership and commitment grows.
I mean, it's all about that conversation, that exchange. You know, it's about, you know, how do we both contribute here because we trust and respect each other, and how do we bring out those bits in each other and encourage that, and call other people forward to their better selves. You know, if somebody's getting into their own spiral about something, like, how do you help them come back from that and say, hey, let's come back, you know, let's come back. And sometimes it means taking a break, mm-hmm. you know, literally leaving the room for 5 minutes and coming back, because again, those kinds of disruptions to the tension or spiraling can help people say, oh, right. That isn't where I meant to go today. And then they come back to it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what are some of the things that you do in your practice?
In what regard? In what area? To take a break?
In helping people have that collaboration or have that respect and trust in a group. Oh.
A big piece of it is I have people really understand what they naturally bring and acknowledge that those contributions in the group, you know. So whether I'm working with an individual client and helping them, I'd get that language and identify that, or I'm working with a group, I'm always helping people understand, you know, what are your superpowers? What's the real gift that you bring? And now, okay, so let's bring together all those gifts and superpowers. And if there are gaps, then can the group compensate, or do you need to bring in another resource? Yeah. And with individuals around their career, and this is also true for solopreneurs that I work with, you know, who do you need to bring into your team? Solopreneurs often need to hire subcontractors or other, you know, other help people. Oftentimes in jobs, we're not in a position to hire people, but we might start to look for, you know, that person's really good at that. I'm either going to learn from them. I do a little informal get some mentoring from that person, or I'm going to see how can I start to collaborate more with them so that the things that they love to do, they get to do more of that. And I don't have to be doing the things that are really draining for me. I look at the ratio for people with, I say to people, if you get to do what you really love and like really love, you're good at it, it's energizing, you're really, you know, you love it. If you get to do that 51% or more of the day, and that's like, that's a good day. Mm-hmm. Most of us are operating at 30 or 40%. Mm-hmm. And if your career, your job is at that 30 or 40%, that leads to burnout, which is why people show up in our offices to say, you know, I need help, because they're burned out. And they don't know why. They're like, well, I'm really good at these things, except maybe they aren't what really enlivens you. Yeah. And you're only getting to do them 30 or 40% of the time. And when it gets to 20%, that's when it's really, they're in critical condition.
Yeah. It's interesting that you bring those percentages. And it also reminds me of a quote I gave the last podcast, which was from Steve Jobs in a commencement address he did at Stanford, I think it was 2006. And he told the graduates that what they really needed to do is love what they do. And, you know, you hear so often the expression, do what you love and the money will follow. And, you know, sometimes it sits well, sometimes it doesn't sit well. But I think there is some kind of wisdom to saying you really have to first understand who you are and do who you are.
Yeah. And sometimes we don't know how to express our love. Because like for some people, their love is like, oh, you know, and for other people, their love is like, yeah, I like what I do. And so when we think that our passion has to be the oh my gosh level, then we think there may be like, I don't love what I do enough. And there's another side to this that I see, and that is because when I work with teams and somebody will sort of like be honest with me and they'll say like, yeah, I'm not going to give it all because this organization doesn't give it all to me. Mm-hmm. There's a distrust with the organization. And to me, that is a fundamental breakdown in our ability to really form good, strong collaborative relationships. When we don't trust the organization to do right by us or to keep us employed or to, even if they have to let us go, that to treat us right well in that process, then we're always holding back. We're always holding back. We just kind of like, yeah, you know, that whole quiet quitting trend. Just going to close my computer at 5 and I'm going to go outside because people were realizing they've been giving their heart and soul and it's literally been sucking them dry.
Yeah. And it's not recognized necessarily.
Yeah.
Somewhere that the psychological contract that the organization had with, or that the employee had with the organization is broken.
Right. And again, this is part of why I'm in business for myself. Because I saw that very young. I started being in entrepreneurial path when I was very young. I was in my 20s and I was really clear. I did not want to be in the corporate world. I had done some of that. I had experienced it enough to say, that's not the life I want. And this isn't to say that everybody needs to leave the corporate world and go be their own business, because then there'd be no place for to hire all of us. But if that's really a compulsion you have or an inclination you have, I absolutely encourage it. And getting back to the portfolio career, it's a great way to explore those ideas.
Yes, it is. And you must have quite a few clients who are in that category, and so yeah. do I. And there are also people who are afraid to leave their job because it's they're worried that what they do is not going to bring them enough money to sustain themselves. What do you say to those people?
Well, then they can go find another job. There's other jobs. I mean, yeah, this is part of the, you know, we talk about, you know, we have power as consumers to buy products that we agree with or are in line with our values. We also have the power as employees to work for organizations that are going to treat us well. You know, in Vermont here where I live, there's a very strong corporate social responsibility community. It's one of the strongest in terms of like by state in the US, one of the strongest cultures for that. Mm-hmm. And the companies that sort of don't treat people well, it comes out really fast. You know, it becomes very known quickly. And the folks who treat people well, they're the top. And when I have people make a list of the top 5-10 companies that you work for, those are almost always the ones that people say, I want to work there because they treat people well. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't, again, we're not all going to go get jobs there. But if we start expecting that from our employers and pulling them forward to be able to do that, then it also makes a difference because it's not just their responsibility, it's our responsibility too.
It is indeed. You make it sound like we all should be moving to Vermont.
Vermont's a pretty fabulous place. Yeah, I love it. I'm not from here. I've lived here for, I don't know, almost 40 years, but when I go to other parts of the US, I'm amazed at how the corporate social responsibility conversation is much quieter than it is here in Vermont. Mm.
Marky, wow, this has been such an extraordinary conversation. What final advice would you give our listeners if they're thinking about what to do with their careers?
You know, get some help if it's not something that is really, you know, if you feel overwhelmed by that, and there's only so many YouTube videos and Instagram posts and all of that stuff that are going to help you. The difference between people who really make a change and the people who want to make a change is they get help. They get help from somebody outside of themselves who can, and it doesn't have to be a paid professional. It could be somebody that you just really respect who helps you with that. But somebody who outside of you can reflect back about what's fabulous and wonderful, and then help you start to see how do you create that strategy? How do you create that roadmap for what's next?
Totally. Absolutely agree with that. This has been fantastic, Marky. Thank you so much for coming on this podcast. And I hope we'll have occasion to talk to you again sometime soon.
I look forward to it. And thank Danielle so much. Thank you so much for inviting me and reaching out. It's really been delightful to get to know you in this process. Yes. As well.
Wonderful. Likewise. So what I say to people is, here's to your career reinvention.
Great. And cool. I always say, go out and be your fabulous self.
That's fantastic. All right. Bye for now.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Reinventing You with me, your host, Danielle Silverman. Tune in on the second and fourth Monday each month at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Join me and feel inspired and optimistic about your future. We only get one life, so embrace change and thrive with me. Find work that aligns best with your soul and what you enjoy. For more information, go to reinventingyou.com.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.